I went for a walk in a nearby park a couple of days ago. Or should I say, my dog took me for a walk. She'd been following me around from room to room, occasionally prodding me with her paw. Every so often, she'd go to the front door and just sit there. It was more than obvious that she wanted out. So, with me at the end of the leash, Suki barged out of the house. She stopped every 10 feet or so, sniffing at something I didn't want to know about. Eventually, we made our way to the park. It was a perfect autumn day. The leaves were beginning to change. Some had fallen from the branches, creating a blanket of colors on the trees. The sky was crystal blue. The sun radiated a gentle warmth to balance the briskness of the autumn fall. There were no other dogs in the park, so I let Suki free. She bolted after a squirrel, a reminder there are still genes of a predatory wolf in her 12-pound body. What a contradiction. To me, she's a loyal friend. To the squirrel, she's a bloodthirsty beast. For a moment, I felt there were predictable patterns and rules that we could learn from nature. But I realized that the park was just one view of nature. From the infinitesimal atoms and molecules to the endless expanse of the universe, there are many views. Our everyday world is governed by the predictable rules of Newtonian physics. Yet we found that the subatomic world of quantum mechanics does not behave by the same rules. Only 2 decades ago, we found that 95% of the universe is composed of dark matter and dark energy, about which we know nothing. This means that we're only beginning to understand 5% of the cosmos. Entanglement is a baffling phenomenon in which the action of one atomic particle instantaneously impacts another particle separated by great distance. Yet we are told that nothing is faster than the speed of light. There are so many contradictions. Are there any consistent lessons that we can take from nature? Maybe the cosmos is built on contradictions. Atoms, the building blocks of the universe, are made of positive protons and negative electrons. Galaxies are a delicate balance of gravity and centrifugal force. Possibly even our own consciousness is a result of the conflicting interpretations of reality. I thought about the ancient concept of yin and yang and how they seem to be in conflict with each other. Yet each is necessary to the other. Perhaps these inconsistencies are mysteries, not contradictions. Maybe over time we can see the whole picture, or at least a better picture. Existence, non-existence, hate, love, infinite, finite, generosity, greed, freedom, oppression. How can we know one without the other? Knowing both, can we transcend them into greater reality? My mind turned to science and religion and how they are frequently at odds to each other. This struck me as strange because they both seek truth and meaning. Or do they? They are both human endeavors and by nature imperfect. It seems that the greatest failures of both have been arrogance, a belief that what is known at a given point in time is an absolute. Perhaps our knowledge of the moment should be tempered by humility. In the words of John Archibald Wheeler, a colleague of Einstein's, as the island of knowledge grows, so do the shores of our ignorance. Maybe mystery is a better word than ignorance. For both religion and science, I hope there will always be a place for mystery.
I am drawn to patterns in nature. They give me a powerful sense of awe and a sense of entering into the mystery that Fred was mentioning in his reflection. But they also provoke in me a desire to understand, what is that? I think there's room in human experience for both the mystery and the knowing, holding both of those. I also believe that patterns in nature can teach us. They can help us to think about new ways of our own systems and our own processes. We are not separate from nature, despite several hundred years of human belief that we are so. Patterns in nature are mimicked in our own bodies. Like Fred, I think we need to engage with nature with humility and respect for the mystery. Nature is not something to be harvested and controlled, but something to inspire us and offer us wisdom for our own lives. So for my time with you today, I've chosen three areas of discovery of the natural world, areas where art and science and spirituality come together in profound ways. I was inspired by a book called Emergent Strategies by Adrienne Marie Brown. So the sermon today will be in three parts. Each will start with a quote from that book, and then I will explore the science, the mystery, and the lessons behind each. Fractals. The micro reflects the macro, and vice versa. The tiniest, most mundane act reflects the biggest creations we can imagine. Tune into the prevalence of the spiral in the universe. The shape of the prints of our fingertips echoes geological patterns all the way to the shape of galaxies. Then notice that the planet is full of these fractals. Cauliflowers, ferns, deltas, veins through our bodies, tributaries, all of these are echoes of themselves in the smallest and the largest scales. So these are hens and chicks. That's what they're called. There's a patch of them growing in my neighbor's yard. I walk by it every day on my dog walks. And I'm always fascinated by how identical they are in their various shapes. Fractals, repeating patterns of smaller units that make up a larger whole. The small is a reflection of the large, and vice versa. Mathematicians have been able to develop equations to create fractals and generate fractal patterns. The understanding of fractals has helped make computer simulations more realistic. So you can appreciate when you see computer-generated imagery in a movie that fractals have allowed them to be far more realistic, finding the mathematical formula. This is a fractal derived from Google Earth. A scientist has made it his life's work to look at Google Earth and find fractals that emerge from the photos. Google Earth is essentially, they've taken a photo of every square inch of the Earth. And this comes from a project of this scientist's. This comes from Spain. The understanding of fractals allowed us to have cell phones. How the current moves through the phones is not linear. If it was a linear line, there's no way you could have it be in this small space. But the branching of the fractals, smaller and smaller and smaller bits, allowed that energy to be contained in a smaller space. There was an article in the Atlantic Monthly that told us that fractals make us feel good. Looking at them gives us some of the same brainwave energy that we see with music. Our brains recognize this kinship to the natural world. Our visual system is hardwired to understand and appreciate fractals. So what can these fractals teach us, this pattern in nature? What we practice on the small scale can reverberate to the large. The patterns in fractals can relate to patterns in human systems. That systematic changes rely on small changes among small groups. These fundamental shifts are not based on large structural shifts in human systems, but on small changes that add up to a large shift. I think about political organizing. I think about terrorist cells designed of small groups with a shared vision who are acting in their local community. Or how the Tea Party did so well politically. They started at the school district level by getting elected to the school boards. They started in small ways and built the cells up to larger and larger. Individual acts of kindness are a lesson we could learn from fractals, understanding that the things we do in our lives can make a difference in the larger human system. Margaret Mead said, "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has." Here's a quote from Emergent Strategies, the words of Sierra Pickett. "Starlings' murmurations consist of a flock moving in sync with one another, engaging in clear, consistent communication, and exhibiting collective leadership and deep, deep trust. Each individual bird focuses attention on their 7 closest neighbors and thus manage a larger flock's cohesiveness and synchronicity." Who doesn't like synchronicity? Tap dancers, synchronized swimmers. I have this desire to create a gesture choir. It's someone telling in the story in the front with grand gestures and people in a flock kind of pattern mimicking the gestures simultaneously with the person. If you're interested, come see me afterwards. So, of course, physicists and mathematicians have modeled these behavior of birds. We're all totally awestruck by the bird's ability to manage uncertainty while maintaining consensus. And they accomplish this with the least effort possible. Each bird attends to its 7 neighbors. These birds are part of a dynamic system in which the parts combine to make a whole with emergent properties. Emergent being when the cloud shifts and new shapes come into play. Those clouds are never led by a single individual. The Cornell Laboratory of Ornithology has done research on murmurations, and they say that they remind us of nature's beauty and how it can take limitless forms that shock us and inspire us. In their studies, they've learned that people mention a feeling of connection when they experience watching this video, as if seeing the synchronicity also reminds us of the value of connection to the world around us, and that these connections can truly be beautiful. So, how can humans apply this wisdom? We can apply this wisdom in ways to teach us how to live with constant change by noticing, by trusting, and by adapting. So these birds and these murmurations are close, but they're not so close that they can't be aware of their own movement and their own bodies. So they have self-awareness as well as awareness of the birds that are closest to them. They teach us to share this burden of change by cooperating with each other. They teach us to share the control of what happens next. No one bird is in charge. What happens next emerges. So when I was reflecting on murmurations, I actually thought about our strategic plan at UUSS. We have a wonderful strategic plan voted on by the congregation, but our team that put it all together with your help and your input decided to not have very concrete or specific action plans or even concrete or specific timelines because they wanted to be open to what emerges from this group. They wanted to be open to how we're going to be together. So they've given us options and visions of how we move forward. But as we move forward, being attentive to the collective, being attentive to the changes that emerge within us, who knows what will happen? Who knows what we will be in the 5 years of this strategic plan? They understood that leadership needed to come from the collective, just like the birds do as they move through the sky. And so our strategic plan going forward, as we think about its implementation, we're calling it Flying to the Future, and we hope you will fly with us. Here is a quote from Emergent Strategies. Many trees grow from a common root system underground and are reaching up in many bodies of birch, ash, or mangrove. Oak trees wrap their roots around each other under the earth. Mycelium, the threading that makes up most mushrooms, communicates between trees, particularly about toxic growth, a process called mycorrhiza. Most animals, including humans, sustain parasites and bacteria along and within our bodies, some of which manage waste and keep us well. Parasites can be symbiotic and help each creature thrive. The largest organism in the world is in eastern Oregon. It's 2,200 acres in size and 2,000 years old. The largest organism on Earth is a mycelial mat, fungal threadings that grow underground. These fungal threads are the Earth's natural internet. They channel nutrients and information among plants. The web is so dense that there can be hundreds of kilometers of mycelium under a single footstep. Mycelium infects and colonizes the roots of all trees and plants. And where the fungal cells interact with the root cells, there's a trade of carbon for nutrients. These fungal mats also process waste. Mycelium is sentient. It knows you are there. When you walk across landscape, it leaps up in the aftermath of your footsteps, trying to grab the debris as the result of the pressure on the earth. One scientist said that the invention of the computer internet is an inevitable consequence of the previously proven biologically successful model. Mycelium connects different individuals in the forest. Individuals not only of the same species, but between species like birch and fir. And it works to communicate between species and process waste in the forest. It is said that when a tree knows that it's going to die, it offers its remaining nutrients to the mycelium, who spread it out to feed all the other trees. This system has its own intelligence. And it's based on the idea of symbiosis, beings working together, communicating, supporting, and enriching each other. I remember learning about symbiosis in biology class in junior high or high school, but I remember the focus was on the idea about parasites, about one being attaching itself to another. I never remember any kind of discussion of interconnectedness and a symbiosis that includes multitudes. So what is the wisdom that we can learn from this system? As individuals, we can reflect on cooperation rather than competition. We can understand how we fit into a system and to live into our place with humility. We can learn to stop trying to control things. Recognize that we are dependent. Recognize that being dependent is a good thing. We each have a role in our community. We each have gifts to offer. But I think it's particularly important to note in this case that if something feels like a parasite to you, it may actually have something to offer you or something to teach you. Our seventh principle talks of interdependence, respect for the interdependent web of which we are all a part. What is it that we can learn from nature? What can nature offer us? Whatever it has to offer us, whatever wisdom it has to give, must be received with gratitude and humility. We are not separate from nature. We feel the patterns of nature in our bodies. They resonate for us. They resonate in our brains and our spirits. But these patterns and systems of nature that have their resonance in our bodies and in our consciousness, they have their own power and their own authority that is greater than any one being. And some may call that power an authority. Some may call that interdependent web God. Blessed be, and amen.